Okay. Ah, there it is. Okay. All right, guys.
Recorded?
Thank you.
Live.
All right. Where I hit the start button, it didn't give me that signal. So the wonder of computers. They only work sometimes. But we're going to have a great show tonight. This is the Yahweh's Covenant People show. And I'm expecting Pastor Ken Gregg. He hasn't been able to make the last two shows. We've had other callers to pick up the slack, however. Randy Gray and Nico in Finland, both of those gentlemen have been calling in and adding their 2 cents worth. So we are going to continue with the study of the book of Galatians, chapters 4 and 5. We should be able to get through both of those chapters today. I'm sorry, chapters 5 and 6. And finish the book of Galatians. But I want to back up just quickly to Galatians 3:16. And you know, I spent a lot of time on several passages in Galatians 3, including verse 16, which is horribly mistranslated. And I'll just quote it here from the King James. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. And obviously, we understand this expression, to Abraham and his seed, as referring to his descendants in the plural, okay? Not singular. This is you can take the word as a collective singular, meaning a bunch of people, namely a collection of descendants, but not as a single individual. And I quoted extensively from the work of Arnold Kennedy and also from Bill Fink, his translation of Galatians chapter 3, showing that the following verse or the following sentence of this verse has been mistranslated by the King James translators. I'm going to read that sentence now. He said, not and to seeds as of many, and of course this means to us not to many seed lines or many different peoples. We're only talking about one line of descent. That's what we're talking about here. One line of descent, not many lines of descent. And, of course, the Judeo-Christians interpret this as being not too many people, but one person. That's how they interpret this. And, of course, they're wrong. Continuing with the sentence, but as of one and to your seed, he's talking to us here. He's talking to us, our seed line, our descendancy, our people, which is Christ, as it says here. And, of course, let me flip real quickly to William Fink's translation. All right, and he says, he translates it correctly here. Now to Abraham, the promises have been spoken, and to his offspring. It does not say, and to offsprings, as of many, but as of one, and to your offspring, which are anointed. Okay, so he was talking about the seed line of the Israelites, of the Adamites, of the Shemites. And so the word Christ is falsely put in here by the King James translators. It's not a reference to Christ at all. It's a reference to the anointed seed, to our people. This is very clear. Now, I just came across in Daniel chapter 9, total confirmation that this is the correct interpretation. I'm going to quote Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. And we have been discussing with respect to Galatians, the book of Galatians, Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 37, which prophesy that the law will be written in our hearts, not abolished. Okay. Now, the Daniel 9:27 is a very specific prophecy about the coming of the Messiah. I'm going to quote verses 24 through 27. This is the 70 weeks prophecy, of course. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon the holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness. Okay, which means justice, you know, good, the correct way. Righteousness means justice. And to seal up the vision and prophecy. And to anoint the most holy. Okay, we're going to anoint the most holy here. Of course, that is Jesus Christ. All right, verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, the wall, and even in troublous times. And okay, we're talking about the return of Ezra and Nehemiah from Babylon and the rebuilding of the Jerusalem walls and temple. Okay, so this 70 weeks prophecy begins from the decree, and this was Artaxerxes, from that decree, I believe it was 439 BC, something like that. I don't have the exact timeline in front of me. But this was, in fact, fulfilled by Jesus the Christ. Okay, verse 26. Now here, listen very carefully. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, underline here now, but not for himself. Total confirmation that our interpretation of Galatians 3:16 is correct, because Jesus Christ did not come to redeem himself. He came to redeem the anointed seed. That is Israel, our people. That's who he came to redeem. And the King James has simply got this absolutely wrong. And that word Christ does not belong there in Galatians 3:16. It should be anointed, okay? It was referring to our people, not to a single person, namely Jesus the Messiah. Okay, so I wanted to point that out. And so the two prophecies concerning the coming of the Messiah and the changing from the old covenant to the new covenant, Daniel 9:27, and, of course, Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 37, are fully fulfilled by Jesus the Messiah. And he came to redeem the seed, the holy seed of Israel. He didn't come to redeem himself. So the interpretation that you're given in the King James is just plain wrong. So let's now get into Galatians 5 and 6. I think we'll be able to get through both of these. I'll probably go a little longer than 1 hour. But if you have any comments or questions, please feel free to call in. And let me just back up into chapter 4, because in chapter 4 we were talking about the fact that Paul makes a big distinction between the descendants of Isaac and the descendants of Ishmael. And so anybody who believes that the New Testament, and especially Paul, is not discriminating between people of different races, between different cultures, and between different seed lines, then you're absolutely wrong, because he is absolutely, in Galatians chapter 4, distinguishing between the descendants of Isaac, which are the Anglo-Saxon people, of course, and the descendants of Ishmael, who are today known as the Arabs, the Iranians, etc., those people who still reside in the Middle East, okay? And so consequently, Paul is confirming the exclusivity of the Anglo-Saxon Israelites, that we are God's chosen people, we are the children of the covenant. To us were the promises made, and not to Ishmael. And if they don't apply to Ishmael, they don't apply to anyone else in the world either. So any Judeo-Christian who tells you that the covenants now apply to them or their church, they are wrong. They are just plain and simple wrong. Paul does not teach that, nor does any sentence in the Bible teach any such thing. The covenants, the promises, contract, the covenant and the contract were made between Yahweh Elohim, our Creator, and us exclusively, and not with anybody else. So we are the people of the promise. We are the heirs of the covenant, and it is up to us to accept the inheritance and put it to work. So this has been exclusively set aside for us and not for any other people, not for any other race. The other races will benefit when we do our job, when we fulfill our commission to be his chosen people, okay? Guest 8.
Hello? Hello, Eli.
Yes.
Hello, Eli. It's Bill Sink.
Oh, hi, Bill.
Okay, how you doing?
Great to hear from you.
Good.
So You know, I was just going into your translation of Galatians 3:16, and you know, we spent a considerable amount of time showing that the King James Version, where it puts in the word Christ instead of the word anointed, and implying that the usage there is singular, not plural, is an improper translation. What do you have to say about it?
I have a paper on Seth Williams on IsraelElect.com in Clifton Emhiser's section.
Okay.
Titled Yahweh has Anointed the Children of Israel,
mm-hmm.
which walks through point for point why that should say the anointed and not the Christ.
Right, right.
And it illuminates several passages in the New Testament where the phrase ho Christos in Greek,
mm-hmm.
which means the anointed or the Christ,
yes.
be interpreted as meaning the anointed, meaning the children of Israel as a group.
Yes.
There are also many other Old Testament passages that illuminate that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One that stands out is in Hebrews.
Okay.
Where it explains the, it describes the suffering of the children of Israel.
Right.
And says that by faith, Moses, becoming full grown, refused to be called the son of the daughter of Pharaoh,
uh-huh.
rather preferring to be mistreated with the people of Yahweh than to have the temporary rewards of error.
Right.
Having esteemed the reproach of the anointed, it wasn't Christ in
mm-hmm.
Egypt being reproached. It was the children of Israel in Egypt being reproached.
Okay, now I have seen that also translated as Christ in the singular.
Well, right, but Christ wasn't in Egypt being reproached.
He wasn't? Okay, well, but let me play devil's advocate here. They will say that this is a prophecy concerning Jesus Christ. I mean, this is how I have understood their argument. What do you say to that?
Well, I understand it, but that's silly because Moses is present.
Uh-huh.
During this reproach.
Right. And
Moses,
we're talking about the children of Israel.
Christ.
Right.
Moses
yeah.
had no opportunity to betray Christ.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So it must be talking about the time of Moses
yeah.
and the enslavement of the children of Israel by the Egyptians.
Right, right. And I also quoted from the work of Arnold Kennedy, who showed that in the original Greek, the terminology is not for a singular person. It's for a group. It's group terminology. Not a singular person, in which case you would have, you know, capitalization being justified and the singular, you know, word Christ justified, but obviously it's not. What is the book of Hebrews likewise in the plural there?
Well, no, but the Greek verbs, when used with a singular entity, ho Christos is singular in both places. There's
okay.
no doubt.
Okay.
And the Greek verbs are singular,
right.
no doubt. But those singular Greek verbs, there are many other places in the scripture where singular Greek verbs are used of a collective or of a plural
right.
entity.
Right, and that's exactly how the British use their verbs, because we Americans, we have correct English. Well, when we have like a collective word like the band, we use the plural or the singular, the band played on, okay, or the band was good. You know, we use it as collective singular. And the British will say the band were good or the band, you know, did, you know, play on. They have a different tradition of using, you know, the different verbs than we do, okay. And so it can be translated either way, given those two traditions. But what you're saying is, that is clearly not a reference to the singular Christ. It's a reference to the anointed seed.
Right. It's a reference to the singular group.
Right.
The group in Galatians 3:16, various groups of Abraham's seed are being
right.
contrasted to one
right.
another.
And we
Edomites
also...
The Edomites and
yes.
the descendants of the Keturah and the descendants of Hagar, as opposed to the descendants
right.
of Israel, who were the ones covered by the covenant.
Right, right. And Galatians chapter 4 goes into that distinction between the descendants of Isaac through Isaac and the other descendants, you know, of Abraham who were not of Isaac, which Paul does not give credence as descendants of the covenant. So,
right.
Yeah.
Only the descendants of Israel are the descendants of the covenant.
Right.
In Galatians chapter 4, Paul is talking to Galatians. The Galatians are a Celtic people descended from the Cimmerians of ancient history.
Okay.
The Cimmerians, the Greek word for the Cimmerians is the same Greek word which is on the bilingual Persian inscriptions translated Saka or Sake in Persian.
Okay.
And I can cite Persians. In fact, my German origins pamphlets do cite Persian inscriptions, which prove this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
The Greek word transliterated Cimmerians is the Assyrian word for the Scythians.
Okay, right.
They're the same people that later historians confused as two separate groups.
Right, right.
The Cimmerians, a part of the Cimmerians, broke off and went back into Anatolia and were later known as Galatians.
Right.
And they're identified as Celts or Gauls,
mm-hmm.
because the same Greek word, Galatahi, is the word that the Romans translated Gauls.
Right.
Speaking not only of Anatolia, but also of France.
Right.
Modern-day France.
Yeah, and of course, our people, the scattered Israelites of the 10 tribes, wandered throughout Europe, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Are the descendants of the Scythians. They're the
right.
10 tribes of, well, actually, it's all 12 tribes.
Yes.
But remnants of Judah and Israel, Judah and Benjamin, were left behind.
Right, and they were added later by Sennacherib.
If you read the beginning of Galatians chapter 4, Paul is definitely addressing Israelites, telling these Galatians that they were bondsmen
right.
under the law.
Yeah, and that can't apply to any other people, certainly not Africans and Mongolians, right?
Absolutely not. It can only apply to Israelites.
He's talking about our history.
Offspring of Israel.
Yeah. Now, let me just ask you a general question, because I really want the anti-Paulians within the identity movement to get where we're coming from here, okay? And would I be correct in saying that Paul's epistles are addressed to two categories of Israelites and never addressed to anybody else but those two categories of Israelites? Would you agree with that statement?
The circumcision and the uncircumcision,
right.
Absolutely. In
okay.
that context, I agree with it.
Okay, now, please explain to our audience what you consider to be the circumcision and the uncircumcision.
Well, the circumcision are the people, the descendants of the returnees to Judah,
right.
to Judea,
who are not Jews.
They're
right.
not Jews, they're not Esau, they're not Edomites, they're the pure Israelite remnant of Judah and Benjamin and Levi.
Right.
Kept the law.
Mm-hmm.
They are the circumcision.
Right.
There were also some of the deportees in Mesopotamia.
Right.
In the Euphrates River valleys, in the Tigris River Valley, who also stayed close enough to Palestine to keep the law.
Right. Okay.
And stayed subject to the Persians, and there's much archaeological evidence in that area.
Right, exactly.
Now, those people kept the law, and they were the circumcision.
Yes.
The uncircumcision are all of the cast-off Israelites, the descendants of Israel. Now, there's two groups of those people. There are all of the people that emigrated out of Palestine before the Assyrian deportations.
Okay.
They're the Danan Greeks, the Dorian Greeks, and the Trojan
mm-hmm.
Romans.
Right.
The Romans are descendants of Trojans,
and
who were actually part of the tribe of Judah.
Well, and what about the Spaniards and the British?
Right. The so-called Phoenicians,
yes.
who settled in the Iberian or Hebrew Peninsula
mm-hmm.
and in Cornwall in Britain
right.
are descendants of the Israelites.
Okay, so we're talking two waves. I refer to that wave, that first wave before the deportations, as the Celtic wave, which was primarily over the Mediterranean Ocean by sea. Okay.
Those people, along with some, there's evidence that some Japhethites, such as the Thracians, also reached that area of Europe long before the Israelites.
Yeah, right, right.
And they were the first Caucasians or Indo-Europeans, or sometimes they're identified as Proto-Celts.
Right.
In that region.
Yeah, but they're our kinsmen. They are our kinsmen, the descendants of Japheth, son of Noah.
Absolutely. They
yeah.
were white people
right.
who were descended from tribes other than Shem and...
Exactly. Okay. Randy, are you with us?
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Yeah, let let me and Bill go through this. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to interject, okay?
Sure.
All right. And so then the second wave are now who?
The next wave into Europe, the next major wave into Europe, after the you had Phoenicians as Malaysians, you had Dorian Greeks settling
mm-hmm.
in Britain and France. The Greeks and the Malaysian the Malaysians are Phoenicians.
Okay.
Sales of Miletus was called by Herodotus a Phoenician by race.
Oh, you mean the Milesians? You're pronouncing it like Malay. People may understand. That you're referring to.
M-I-L-E-S-I-A-N.
Right, M-I-L-E, right, okay.
From Miletus, the people from Miletus in
right.
present-day Turkey.
Yes.
They had settled the entire Danube River Valley at a very early time.
Okay.
And so had Greeks and so had Romans in search for salt. I mean, those
right.
people had contributed to the gene pools of Bavaria and
right.
and the Rhineland today.
Yes. Yeah, and they're basically our white ancestors.
Right.
The Aryans of the ancient days.
The second larger and the dominant wave, the dominant
mm-hmm.
wave of people into Central and Western Europe were the Scythians or the Saka.
Right.
The Saxons.
Yes.
And
yeah.
and they gave us other offshoot groups such as the Franks
right.
and other Germanic groups that we know today that speak okay. Germanic languages.
Okay. So before we get into Galatians chapter 5, I just want to clarify this for everybody listening, that when Paul wrote his epistles, which are letters addressed to specific groups, okay, they're not letters addressed to all the races of the world.
Absolutely. And there are clear examples that Paul is addressing specific groups and that Paul understood ancient history. And if you don't mind, I would really like to give you one.
Sure.
Paul tells the Dorian Greeks, the Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10.
Okay.
The Corinthians are Dorian Greeks. They came to Greece after the Trojan Wars.
Okay.
Probably about 1100 B.C. And they kicked out the Danaan Greeks or subjugated the Danaan Greeks, however you want to look at it, whichever accounts you want to believe.
Right.
In the Peloponnesus and took over the city of Sparta and founded the city of Corinth.
Okay.
Sparta and Corinth are the two primary Dorian cities in Greece.
All right.
Now, the Dorians, I believe, Homer mentions them only once, and he puts them on Crete.
Okay.
And I believe that they came from Dor in Palestine.
Ah, interesting.
And that's why they're called Dorians.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. Okay.
Paul tells the Dorian Greeks, all our fathers
yeah.
were under the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Which means
Paul had been baptized in
right.
the cloud and in the sea.
Yes.
The Dorian Greeks were Israelites.
Yes.
Or those words are vain.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, the cloud is from the Exodus from
yes.
Egypt.
Yes.
Yes.
The pillar of the cloud, the pillar of smoke, the pillar of fire.
Yes.
That's the cloud Paul's referring to.
That's right.
All
that's
had
right.
been baptized by the cloud and
now,
by the sea.
Okay. Now were Africans or Mayans or American Indians or Australians, any of those other races involved in that Egypt Exodus?
Absolutely not. Those people aren't even in the scope of the Bible. They're not
right.
even in the world.
That's right.
They weren't taxed by Caesar.
They weren't? Didn't he tax the whole world? Isn't that what it says? He taxed the whole world?
We could probably talk for 15 minutes on the Greek perception of the world.
That's right.
Is not our perception as the planet.
Exactly. Exactly.
As the English conquered the planet, our perception of the world grew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The world was the Mediterranean Greco-Roman world.
Yeah, so we can't
the world
project
inhabited by Adamite.
Right, so we can't project our perception of planet Earth upon the ancient Greeks. They simply did not have that same conception. Right,
right? They had a whole different structure of thinking than
right.
we do.
Yeah, but you're saying that these Greeks understood that they were Israelites, correct?
They were told they were Israelites. There were at times Greeks that did know, but that knowledge was lost.
Yeah.
There is a letter in Josephus. It's recorded in Josephus from a king of Sparta. It's in Josephus's Antiquities.
Okay.
And the Spartans explain to the people, they wrote a letter to the high priest of Jerusalem and said, hey, we're related.
Yes.
We're the same stock. We're right. Children of Abraham, too.
Right, right.
And the Spartans are Dorian Greeks. They're from the same tribe of Greeks as the Corinthians.
Right. Okay. So understanding that...
Now, go ahead. I want to make a contrast with the book of Romans.
All right.
The Romans were the wild olive tree that had to be grafted back in.
Okay.
The Romans descended from the Trojans.
Yes.
It can be demonstrated that the Trojans came from Judah's era.
So did the Brits, by the way. The Brits descended from the Trojans as well.
Yes, that is in Virgil. Virgil states that in the Aeneid.
Okay. Yes. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Because the Romans are from Judah's era, the Trojans had emigrated out of Egypt,
mm-hmm.
along with the Danning Greeks, and they were the two main waves of Hebrews who left Egypt before the Exodus.
Correct, yes, yes.
They left by sea.
Yes.
This is attested to in Diodorus Siculus, who wrote about 50 B.C., and I cite this in my pamphlet, which is available on IsraelElect.com,
mm-hmm.
which is Classical Origins of the Dorian and Danann Israelite Greeks.
Okay.
And Classical Records of Trojan Roman Judah. Those pamphlets explain all this, and
mm-hmm.
those essays on the internet,
right.
they're not really
yeah.
pamphlets.
Yeah, and so this history, because we're talking about the history of the Israelite people, in their various migrations throughout the Mediterranean basin, okay, previous to the Exodus, post-Exodus, and also around and before the Saxon Exodus or the Saxon deportations.
Right, the deportations by the Assyrians.
Right. And so all of these people who had already settled the Mediterranean basin, the Milesians, the Spartans, the Greeks, the Spaniards, the Romans, the Peloponnesians, the Brits, even, I don't know if we want to include yet the Welsh. They may have come later. But all of these people are Israelites, correct?
They're all Israelites or Israelites, some of them mixed in with other Adamic tribes such as the Thracians.
Right.
Or the Athenians and who are Ionian Greeks.
Right.
And the Ionians are Japhethites. The word Ionian in Persian inscriptions is Yavanna, the Javan of Genesis chapter 10:4.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, in Genesis 6, it says that Japheth shall dwell in the tents of Shem.
And that is true with the sea-dwelling Japhethite tribes.
Right.
Japhethite tribes dwelt on the coasts.
Yes.
And they can all be identified around the Mediterranean in Europe on the European side and in the Black Sea, around the Black Sea.
Right. So as I interpret that prophecy, because that's a prophetic statement, it turns out that the Shemites, having resulted in the Israelites and the Davidic king lines, ultimately through the passage of history, became subjects of the various kings and queens of Europe who all descended from the tribe of David. All right. And so these nations that were founded by the House of David in Europe incorporated many of the Slavic people who were, in fact, descended from Japheth, correct?
Yes. There are definitely Slavs amongst the Saxons in Europe. The,
uh-huh.
the people around Brandenburg, which is southwest of Berlin, are Slavic,
mm-hmm.
Are from a known Slavic tribe from the Middle Ages.
Yes.
There
and we've
Slavs.
Gotten along with those people. We are, in fact, permitted to intermarry with Slavs.
Well, the Slavs that made it into Europe before the Mongol invasion.
Okay.
many of the Eastern European Slavic tribes have Mongol blood in them because of the conquests of Genghis Khan. And,
right, exactly.
Those people can be pretty much identified. They usually look like Leonid Brezhnev. Or...
yeah, right. So if you want to marry a Slavic woman, make sure her hair is not bleached blonde. Make sure
right.
she's a real blonde. Okay.
Well, my point is that because the people that the Romans departed from the Israelites prior to the Exodus, They were never given the law.
Yes.
They were the wild olive tree.
Right.
And that's why Paul tells the Romans that they had to be grafted back in.
Yes, right.
Where he tells the Corinthians, in stark contrast, in Corinthians chapter 10, that they were, their ancestors were baptized by the cloud and the sea.
Right.
Their ancestors stayed with the main body of Israel and had the law, even though they lost it.
Right.
1400, you know, by the time of Paul.
Exactly.
And they were not the wild olive tree. They were never,
yes,
told they had to be grafted back in.
Right. Now,
but they were
now,
all under the covenant.
Now, I can tell you, Bill, I figured all this out without knowing a word of Greek. Now, you know Greek very well. And
I can read biblical Greek. Yes.
Yeah. But I think the point we want to raise in showing the errors of the Judeo-Christians regarding the epistles of Paul is, number one, they do not apply, these letters, these epistles, were not written to the whole human race, even though some of his statements may be philosophical and apply a broad spectrum, okay? The fact is that they're letters to particular groups with specific intent and making specific mention to that it can only apply to Israelites, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did they go so terribly wrong in universalizing these epistles? Maybe you can just give us kind of a general sketch of what went wrong.
I'll give you my opinion on this is that when the Englishman who in the 1600s sat down to translate the New Testament into English, and the New Testament was translated into English before it was translated into German or any other European, modern European language.
Okay.
It was translated into Latin by Jerome, and there were other translations in Latin before Jerome. Jerome borrowed from some of those.
Okay.
But they weren't entire translations. They were pericopes. They were translations of particular sections.
Right. Passages, yes.
Mm-hmm. And when the English sat down to translate the Bible into English, they didn't know that they were actual physical descendants of the children of Israel.
Right, they didn't understand that.
They
yeah.
did not have the archaeology that
mm-hmm.
we have today.
Right, right.
Nineveh wasn't dug out of the ground yet.
Right, yeah, and a lot of people didn't believe there was such a city as Troy.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
they
that was discovered
it was
later.
A fairy tale.
Uh-huh. Right, right. So, and also,
ancient Greeks believed it and testified to it.
Right.
More modern people thought it was
yeah.
a fairy tale.
So now
and
that we today have
a lot of those cities never existed. But
right, right.
Theology has proven that the
yeah.
ancient Greek testimonies and the ancient Hebrew Bible are true.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's why the Bible is a fascinating, accurate, true history book of the ancient world. Modern archaeology has proven it, hasn't it?
But Yahweh asks, who is blind but my servant?
Yes.
Israel was supposed to be called by another name.
Hey, but those Judeo-Christians, they know it all.
Yeah.
When
the Englishmen in 1608 or 1611 or whenever they sat down to first translate
mm-hmm.
the King James Version of the Bible, and their predecessors like Whittingham and Coverdale and
right.
and the people that put the Geneva Bible together in Tinsdale,
yes.
when they made those translations, they knew that they fit into the picture.
Right.
But they didn't know that they were the physical descendants of the ancient Israelites.
That's right. They didn't know that. Yeah.
And because of that, they were forced to translate the Greek in the most general universalist way that they could twist it.
Okay.
And basically that's what they did.
Right. So you're not saying it was deliberate. It was just because of ignorance, popular ignorance, of the fact that the European Anglo-Saxon people are, in fact, Israel. They didn't know that. And since they didn't know that, that's why the translations became universalized.
Exactly. And
okay.
because Paul's the most prolific writer, he's the largest victim of the contortion of those who don't understand.
It's contortionism. That's Bible interpretation today. It's contortionism. That's right. That's right.
There are places in Paul that are very clearly, when you compare, when you know the Greek and the forms of the verbs and the cases and the tenses, that are very clearly errantly translated even today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite ones to point out is where the, and you could see where the King James Version adds the word men to the verse, is where the King James says, not all men have faith.
Okay.
Where Paul says, the faith is not for all. There's a huge difference.
Oh, that's a tremendous difference.
And that's 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Verse 2, and that we should be protected from those disgusting and wicked men, since the faith is not for all.
You're right. That's right.
Paul's explaining that these disgusting and wicked men are the people of Satan. That's
right.
The thrust.
How dare he say that the faith is not for all? That's the opposite of what the universalists teach.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think that should suffice as a really good intro. Let's go into Galatians chapter 5. And, you know, I'm going to read from the King James Version. And, you know, if you have a major objection to the translation, just speak up, okay? All right, verse 1. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. By the way, this brings to mind James, I forget which chapter and verse, where he talks about the perfect law of liberty.
Yes, this is exactly coherent with James and with some of Peter's writings.
Right. And when I read this in Galatians, this is in total agreement with what the Apostle James has to say. And be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. So we're talking here about the rituals of the Old Covenant, which in fact did not liberate the Israelites.
They actually, the Israelites.
Yeah, they used the law actually to enslave themselves, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
They used legalism in the law to enslave themselves.
Right.
But and, we're also where you're enslaved to a priesthood.
Yes. Oh, no.
And there is absolutely no basis for a professional priesthood in the New Testament.
Yes.
Because all of the rituals were done away with.
Right.
The Catholics reinvented ritual, sacrament.
The devil, you say.
To keep the people enslaved,
yes,
in the New Testament.
So in other words, the Catholics...
We're free from all that. We're free from the works of men. We're free from the works of the law. And this is the liberty that Paul is talking about.
Okay, we're not saying that we shouldn't obey the law. What we're saying is that the law, as instituted through the priesthood and then later adopted by the Pharisees, who weren't even Judahites, okay,
right,
and invented that religion called Judaism, that's what we should not be doing, correct?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Even the Catholic priests, they perpetuate it.
Right. The Catholic priests, they're Catholic Pharisees.
Yes.
That's what they are.
They're no better than the Pharisees.
They're no better than the Pharisees, absolutely. Okay, verse 2. Behold, I, Paul, say to you, that if you be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. For I testify again to every man, and of course man here means Israelites, that is circumcised, that he is a debtor to do the whole law. Okay, so
okay,
if you're practicing...
Let me discuss something about that circumcision, because that a lot of people who were circumcised as infants, and that's most people today,
yeah,
they get really down on themselves about that.
Okay.
But Greek has what's called a medium voice in its verbs.
Okay.
And when the medium voice appears, quite often, and it's the grammatical rule, but sometimes the rule is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in a medium voice, the initiator and the receiver of the action of a verb are the same.
Okay.
And where the circumcision is discussed in Galatians 5:3, it's the medium voice that's used.
Okay.
And I translate that, and I testify again to every man getting himself circumcised that he is obligated to do the entire law.
Okay, so because obviously that's someone who's willingly doing it.
Right. Someone who gets himself circumcised in order to satisfy the Judaizers.
Right. And this again reminds me of James, where he says, he who offends in one point of the law is guilty of all.
Exactly.
It's exactly what Paul was saying here.
Exactly. And if you were a Greek that wanted to listen to a Judaizer and get yourself circumcised, because that's what's going on here.
Or to listen to a modern-day Jew.
That is what Paul's addressing.
Yes.
The Greeks who are listening to the Judaizers, they are the subject of the entire epistle of Galatians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, that's who Paul is addressing here. So don't get it. In other words, if you were a man today, 20, 30, 40 years old, you were probably circumcised in a hospital because some Jew doctor told your mother that it was healthy.
Guest 9 says, I was brought up Baptist that having a drink was total evil. With my new perspective, having a little glow on your face once in a while is not a big deal. Well, I wouldn't go that far, Guest 9. Maybe you should just show a little blood in the face.
Right. Might take a few shots to do that.
Yeah, might take a few shots to get that. Okay, verse 4. Christ is become of no effect to you. Whosoever of you are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. Now, we're not talking about the whole law.
We're not talking about Christ. If you want to follow the law, I read verse 4.
Okay.
You are left unemployed or useless,
yes,
apart from the anointed.
Okay. The anointed ring.
We're going to go off and be a Judaizer and follow the law and preach that people have to be circumcised. You're apart from the anointed,
okay,
so, Israelites who aren't going to do those things.
Okay, so let us generalize just a little bit here. What we're talking about is we're talking about those who follow, in general, Paul was addressing, as I said at the beginning of the show, Paul was addressing two types of Israelites. Those who were steeped in the rituals of the law. Okay,
right.
Which Jesus Christ had come to abolish those rituals, not
absolutely
the whole law, as prophesied in Daniel. I quoted Daniel 9:27 and Jeremiah 31 verses 31 through 30. So it's clear that the Old Testament prophesies that there will be some kind of change in the way the law is applied, not that the law will be abolished. Is that how you understand it?
Absolutely. The law is not abolished. The law is fulfilled.
Yes.
The law and the prophets are fulfilled because the law and the prophets themselves say that there will be an end to these things,
right,
and that's manifest in one place clearly in Daniel chapter 9.
Right, right.
That the rituals would be done away with.
Exactly, exactly. So
the rest of the law is covered, as Yahshua Christ himself explains, by the precepts of the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. And it will be written in our hearts, not abolished.
Absolutely.
There's a big deal between abolition and being written and established in your heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's Jeremiah chapter 31.
That's right.
So the law and the prophets say that the new law will be written in our hearts.
Yeah. And it's not really a new law. It's just the way it's applied, because it's applied with love and compassion for our brethren, which is totally different from the way in which the rituals were applied in the olden days, when people would accuse each other, you know, and be hypocrites themselves for breaking the law while accusing each other.
That is all very well explained by Paul in the Gospel to the Hebrews.
Right. we'll get to that after Galatians, okay? Here we go, verse 5. For we through the Spirit wait for the hope of righteousness by faith. Okay, now righteousness, as I understand it, means justice. Okay?
Right.
It doesn't just mean obedience to the law. It means justice. What Paul is getting at here is that it's not enough to just obey the law. You have to practice justice. You have to have justice, righteousness in your spirit. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. And practicing the law, and certainly the rituals of the law, doesn't do that, does it?
No, the rituals of the law do not practice justice. The rituals of the law do not teach love.
No, they don't.
Love for your brethren is virtually omitted in the law.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about it.
It's not a facet of the law.
The law doesn't say anything about love, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. Let's continue. Verse 6. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision avails anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which works by love. Okay, now, works. That means it's doing something. It's not just sitting around pretending to be righteous and not accomplishing anything, any kind of works, correct?
Right. The Paul and James, a lot of people condemn Paul because they don't feel that Paul teaches works, but Paul consistently teaches that good works, the doing of good works, are a part of faith.
Right. Right.
And they like to, the Paul bashers like to cite James that faith without works is dead, but to James, faith and works are two different things.
Right.
To Paul, faith includes works.
Yes, I agree. That's how I understood. You know, and I knew when I got to Paul, because when I was spent 23 years writing my book, The Great Impersonation, How the Antichrist Has Deceived the Whole World, I realized when I got to Paul that he uses the word faith in a different sense, a more broader sense than
Absolutely.
James. Okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
James is very narrow with it, and works is something different.
Yes. Okay.
Now, the confusion with Paul is the way the phrase "the works of the law"
yes.
is perceived.
Okay, or translated, yes.
The works of the law is a totally separate issue than the works of love through faith.
Okay.
The works of the law are the rituals of the Old Testament.
Okay, all right.
And if you understand the Greek and read the Septuagint,
right,
the ritual,
which was in Greek. Yeah.
Which is in Greek. It's the Greek version of the Old Testament scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
The rituals, the sanctuary rituals or the temple rituals that the Levite priests conducted,
mm-hmm.
the rituals of the sacrifices and the incense, those things are referred to as works.
Yes.
In Numbers 3:8, 4:47, 8:26, in Exodus chapters 35 and 36, several
mm-hmm.
times, the rituals. The works according to the holy offices,
yeah.
the works of the sanctuary. In Numbers 8:26 it says, "And his brother shall serve the tabernacle of witness to keep charges, but he shall not do works,
mm-hmm.
because he's unclean.
Right.
So shalt thou do the Levites in their charges."
Okay.
The rituals which the Levites conducted are being called works.
Yeah. Okay. All right,
it's the
so
Greek
now,
word ergon.
All right,
the
so now
the word Paul uses.
Okay, now here's where the universalists go wrong, because they overgeneralize the use of the word works, applying it to having to do good works in your life. Is it conceivable that the Bible teaches us not to do good works?
That's inconceivable.
That's inconceivable. Right. It's ridiculous.
Paul is teaching us to do good works.
That's right.
No longer to do the works of the law,
right.
the rituals.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the confusion comes from. And had these universalists understood the Greek Septuagint, they would understand, number one, Paul is using the word faith in a broader sense than James. And this word works is a direct reference to rituals of the temple priesthood.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Let's go on. Verse 7. "You did run well. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? This persuasion comes not of him that calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump." What's he saying here?
I translate verse 7 as a question. Have you run well, you who have resisted to be persuaded in the truth?
Mm-hmm.
In
okay.
other words, because you're following the Judaizers.
Right.
You're
so that semicolon, that
the
semicolon,
your life isn't going that well for you.
Yeah, so that semicolon after the word well is not properly placed, you're saying.
I have a comment there. Have you run well, you who have resisted to be persuaded in the truth?
Right.
That persuading is not from he, Christ, who
mm-hmm.
is calling you. A little leaven leavens the whole dough.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 10. "I have confidence in you through the Lord that you will be none otherwise minded, but he that troubles you shall bear his judgment, whosoever he be." And, of course, this is verified throughout all of the Gospels that, you know, whoever deems to judge you will be judged by his own judgment. Correct? Isn't that what he's saying here?
"He who is agitating you shall bear the judgment,
yes.
whoever he may be."
Right.
"I have confidence for you among the number of the prince." In other words, Paul is talking to Israelites.
Right.
The "for you among the number of the Lord."
Yeah.
However you want to translate that word, kurios.
Yeah. Right.
I translate it prince in the New Testament. I have a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
I explain it in my translations.
Yeah.
It'll be explained when I post my translations on the internet.
Let's talk quickly about the vision that Peter had of the unclean animals. Aren't we really talking here, and isn't that passage not about real food, what it's about is that when Peter had that vision, he finally agreed with Paul that the vision was really about the circumcision and the uncircumcision, and that Peter
Absolutely.
Was wrong. Peter was wrong in casting aspersions on the uncircumcision, because both the circumcision and the uncircumcision were redeemed by Yahshua Messiah.
Absolutely. But the Galileans, which
mm-hmm.
Peter was,
yeah.
they went to the temple three or four times a year as they were required. They learned from the Pharisees.
Uh-huh.
And if you weren't circumcised, no matter who you were, you weren't any good.
Right.
Now, this Peter was raised in, and he couldn't comprehend
mm-hmm.
bringing the gospel message to somebody who wasn't circumcised.
Right, exactly.
Peter did not have the revelation concerning the dispersions of the children of Israel that Paul had.
Yeah. But isn't it true, though, that the vision that Peter had, he accepted as meaning exactly that he should accept the uncircumcised Israelites as his brethren?
Peter had the vision immediately before some uncircumcised Greek or Roman men showed up to
mm-hmm.
take him to an uncircumcised man's house.
Right.
That's the context of the vision.
Right. So we're not
it
talking
has nothing to do with ham sandwiches.
That's right. So the Judeo Christians have got it wrong again, don't they?
Yes.
They simply don't understand the scriptures. Unbelievable.
They only read a verse at a time.
and then they expound, pontificate on that one verse, not knowing anything of what they're talking about. Verse 11, "And I, brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of the cross ceased." Well, what's he saying here? This is a bad translation.
"Then has the stumbling block of the cross been rendered idle."
Okay.
"The stumbling block is laid in Zion. And anyone who stumbles on the block will be crushed or destroyed."
Yes.
The Jews could not give up the rituals, the
mm-hmm.
legalism, and the use of that to control the people.
Right. Right.
That's the legalism is how even the Catholic Church, there's a whole body of church law, has nothing to do with God's law.
That's right.
And they use that to control the people.
Of course. Of course. And they invented all those superstitious doctrines about,
Absolutely.
You know, getting your relatives out of the purgatory.
Mainstream churches are about nothing but power and control.
Power and control. Absolutely. Verse 12, "I would they were even cut off which trouble you." And he's talking about his own people, right?
No, here he's talking about those Judeans who were Judaizing the Galatians and getting them to practice the circumcision.
Right.
"I would even be obliged that those upsetting you were to cut themselves off."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, take that circumcision knife to themselves.
Yeah, right. Verse 13, for brethren. He's talking to his brethren, right? He's not
Absolutely.
Talking to Mongolians.
No, the Greek word adelphus means properly children of the same parent.
From the same womb,
from the same
yes.
mother.
Yes, from the same mother. "You
yes.
have been called to liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." Verse 14, now listen, folks. "For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, ye shall love your neighbor as yourself." Leviticus 19:18.
Right. Now, I detest that word neighbor.
Okay.
Because we could do a whole hour probably on that word neighbor. I translate that, "You shall love him near to you as yourself."
Okay.
And in my translation notes, I have a whole page about that word tone placeion, or him near to you,
okay.
which is translated neighbor.
Right.
It doesn't mean somebody near to you as we perceive it today.
Right. Somebody who lives on the same block.
Regardless of who he is, who happens to buy the house next door.
Right. He's a kinsman.
Right. An alien cannot be your neighbor.
Right.
Cannot be somebody close to you.
Right. Right. Understood. Verse 15. "But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed of one another." And we shouldn't, of course, be criticizing each other constantly, which is actually kind of what's going on between the Paulians and the anti-Paulians. Verse 16.
Well, yeah, that's a good example of
yeah.
it.
This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. So isn't here in verse 16, Paul saying, you should not have a lust of the various evils of the flesh? Isn't this a condemnation of evil?
Yes, it's a condemnation of lust, of the desire of the flesh.
Yes, exactly. So in other words, these people, the Judeo-Christians say, well, you shouldn't criticize anybody for what they believe or what they do. Isn't Paul here criticizing people for having lusts of the flesh?
Paul is constantly criticizing perverts and homosexuals.
That's right.
And other types of fornicators.
In Romans chapter 3, he even says they deserve death.
That's in Romans chapter 1, actually.
Chapter 1? Okay.
Very end of Romans chapter 1, and he says that not only they who perform perverted homosexual deeds are worthy of death, but they who approve of those performing those deeds are worthy of death.
Right. Oh, man.
So it's not only the gay mafia that should be put to death, but all of them who sympathize with them.
Including those Judeo-Christians who teach that homosexuality is okay.
Yes, like John Spong.
Right.
John Spong.
Many so-called Christian denominations take a lax attitude toward homosexuality. They're condemned, aren't they?
Absolutely. They're condemning themselves.
That's right.
And Paul teaches us, we're taught not to judge these people means not to condemn them to death.
Okay.
Okay? That's the words of Christ
in the
Sermon on the Mount agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That we're to no longer stone these people to death because we're not under the law anymore. The law's
written
in our hearts, and we're to seek within ourselves to follow the law.
And also,
we're to
decide
that for ourselves.
Yeah. And Paul
explains... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Finish.
Paul explains in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 that these sinners, these homosexuals, the fornicators, which are race mixers and other types, are to be put out of the Christian community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Yahweh will judge them. God will see that they are judged.
As in 2 Corinthians 6:14, if I'm not mistaken, make not common cause with these unbelievers. we are not.
We could probably talk for a whole hour about 2 Corinthians chapter 6.
Right.
And my translation of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you give me a second.
Right. Well, here, let me just continue reading while they're looking it up. Verse 17, for the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would. Verse 18, but if you be led by of the Spirit, you are not under the law. And, of course, he's talking about the rituals of the law where, you're condemning each other. You're being condemned by not performing these rituals, correct?
Right. Not only the rituals by themselves, per se, but the judgments of the law, because we only have one judge now, and that is Christ.
Okay.
By judgments, I mean the stoning and the condemnation.
Right.
And things like that.
So, in other words, the various penalties that the priesthood enacted, those no longer apply. Okay.
Right. Because men perverted those judgments.
Yes. Well,
the Levitical cities of refuge were put up for sale.
Right. They abused them. They were, in fact, the episode of Jesus and the woman caught in adultery, where Jesus, he drew a He wrote something in the sand. And I believe what he was doing, he was writing the names of all the other men who had committed fornication with that woman. And then one by one, each one of those men left as he wrote their names because they were just as guilty as she was.
Well, that's an excellent interpretation of that verse, of that pericope, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's the last verse of... It's John 7:53, I believe, up until John 8:11 is
right,
where that little story resides.
Right, right.
And it's not in the oldest manuscript.
Yeah. But then at the end of that pericope, he says, go and sin no more. He doesn't tell her the law is going to be abolished.
Absolutely. The law and the prophets were fulfilled, but definitely not abolished. And
right.
Paul and never teaches that they're abolished.
Yeah, the Judeo-Christians interpret that, well, see, he didn't condemn her because, that means the law has been abolished. No, the reason he didn't condemn her was because the people accusing her weren't following the law themselves.
Paul in Romans chapter 3, verse 31, I believe it is, insists that Christians seek to follow the law.
Right. This is great stuff. If you understand the writings of Paul properly, you realize that what's going on here is not the abolition of the law. It's the fulfillment of the law in the spirit and in a love and compassion for your brethren, which the old covenant simply did not have. Okay.
Even Jesus Christ, Yahshua Christ, when he spoke to his disciples, said, I will teach you a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
What to love one another.
Right, right.
In other words, that wasn't in the law. He is insisting upon it from his time.
Okay, now this gets really good, because anybody who says that Paul does not teach against sin is a liar. Verse 19, now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in times past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom.
Absolutely not. And Paul teaches that in other places. It's mentioned in Timothy. This, a very similar list is given.
So clearly he's enunciating a list of sins, which if you perform them, you will not inherit the kingdom. How can it be any clearer?
And here Paul is fornication first, and it could be shown that by fornication, Paul means race mixing.
Right. Absolutely. Verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, which means humility, temperance. Against such there is no law. And that's what we have to bring to the table as Israelites. If we still practice the law, if we weren't practicing law with the spirit of temperance and compassion for our brethren, would the law still do any good?
The spirit of the law written in our hearts, as
yes.
Jeremiah said it would be.
Exactly, exactly. So Paul is fulfilling. He is trying to explain to these Galatians what's contained in Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 37, and Daniel 9:27. Correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Verse 24. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. And isn't that what was exactly going on under the law of the Levitical priesthood?
The legalism of the Pharisees, they're always looking for somebody to accuse. It's evident again and again.
Right.
And we have that today in our government. We
That's
have
right.
Pharisaism over again in all of these government agencies.
Brother William, we have it in our own ranks. We have it in Christian Identity.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Identists are even always, oh, he eats pork. Oh, he doesn't.
Right.
He practices a Sunday Sabbath and not a Saturday
right.
Sabbath.
He practiced a lunar Sabbath. Uh-oh.
Right, and they argue to death about these things. And Paul says, I think it's Colossians 2:14, not to judge one another on food, on Sabbaths, on holidays, on new moons, because he knew that the scriptures would be misinterpreted.
Right.
And none of us are probably interpreting them correctly.
Right.
So, that there would be divisions amongst us as to when the Sabbath is and when the holy days are and when the feast days are.
Yeah. But he's not saying that we shouldn't search for the truth, because he also says search the scriptures and, contend for the faith and search that thou might be justified. What he's really talking about is that we should stop criticizing each other and having this contentious attitude.
Absolutely, and that's my point. If you want to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles and you calculate it to be October 4th, and I calculated to be October 3rd, that doesn't mean I'm never going to talk to you again. I'm still going to go to your Feast of Tabernacles.
I'm never going to speak to you again as long as I live.
Right. I'll go on the 4th, and I'll keep my mouth shut and enjoy being with my brethren.
Right. So
and
love.
That's more important.
Exactly. Love is more important than our personal interpretation of the law.
Absolutely.
Okay. Or let's go to chapter 6. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. In other words, he's saying, walk a mile in that man's shoes.
Absolutely. And James says that he who saves a soul from sin, he who saves a brethren from error saves a soul.
Right. And Ezekiel says the same thing.
I forget the exact words. But.
Right. But Book of Ezekiel says that. It's about the watchman prophecy. You must alert your brethren to when you know when danger is coming or when wrong is being committed. Injustice being committed. Yeah. Verse 2. Bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Isn't that what Christ did? Didn't he assume our burdens for us?
Yes, he did, but here that's not what Paul's referring to.
Okay.
Here Paul is asking, if you go ahead a little and you read verse 5, for each will bear his own load.
Okay.
Now, there's a conflict the way the mainstream translations translate that.
Okay.
And in verse 2, Paul's asking a rhetorical question.
Okay, why don't you take this verse from verse 2 to verse 5, you know, and because that's inclusive.
All right, verse 2 is a rhetorical question. Paul asks, should you bear one another's burdens and in that manner fulfill the law of the anointed?
Mm-hmm.
And then in verse 5, in verse 3, he says, for if anyone supposes to be something, being nothing, he deceives his own mind.
Okay, so don't be boastful.
Recognize his own work.
Don't be proud, and as in Matthew where John says to the Sadducees who came to be baptized, even Yahweh could make Israelites up from these stones. Don't be arrogant. Don't be arrogant.
These legalists are arrogant.
Yes.
And Paul's telling them to correct each other in meekness.
Yes.
Don't grab somebody by the throat and show them the law and cram it down their throat.
Right.
And boast because you yourself never did that particular wrong.
Right.
That's what Paul's saying.
Exactly.
Should you bear one another's burdens and in that manner fulfill the law of the anointed or the law of the Christ?
Be understanding of your brethren. Understand that they have trials and hardships too, and they have weaknesses.
Absolutely. The burden Paul's talking about here is the burden of the ego and the burdens that we lay upon each other.
Right.
In legalism and in the law. And that's the context of this section of the
Isn't it true that when somebody's suffering and he has committed sin because he's gotten down on himself or, you know, he's just has experienced an episode of weakness, the last thing he needs is somebody coming down on him in total condemnation?
Right. Somebody else boasting that they would never do such a thing.
That's right. Just like these Judeo-Christians who do nothing say, I have not sinned. Why? Because they sit on their couches waiting to be raptured, doing nothing.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Hypocrisy.
People under legalism, people become vainglorious when they've managed, usually by doing nothing.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Okay, take us through verses 4 and 5. You there?
Okay, yeah. Oh, I'm here. So each must scrutinize his own work, and then he has a boast to himself only and not to another.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes along with the gospel where Christ said that good gifts should be given in private.
Right.
Things should be done secretly.
Yes.
And Yahweh, the Father, will reward us.
Mm-hmm.
He will bear his own load.
Yeah.
He who is being instructed in the word must share in all good things with he who is teaching.
Yeah. And so here, it seems to me that Paul is arguing against what I call spiritual materialism. And that is to be, you know, so enraptured with your own worldly performance, let's say as a Christian, that you and your perception of what it means to be a Christian, that you have this subtle, if not blatant, sense of superiority.
And that attitude is upheld today by most of today's evangelicals.
That's right.
And it's perfectly described in the message to the church of the Laodiceans in the Revelation, which is the seventh church.
Right, which we're in today.
Which we're in today,
mm-hmm.
and Laodiceans means self-righteous people.
This is brutal stuff. Brutal.
Yes,
verse
it
6.
Is.
Let and, him that is taught in the word communicate to him that teaches on all good things. So we should, again, we should talk these things over.
Absolutely. We shouldn't be at each other's throats because somebody somebody wants to celebrate a Sunday Sabbath.
Right, right.
Or because somebody has the Passover calculation a day off.
Yeah. Now here, verse 7, Paul verifies that our actions do have consequences. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. So you got to be careful what you do.
Absolutely. And that is, men have been trying to avoid that concept for years.
Yes, yes, we have.
Absolutely unavoidable.
I plead guilty. Sorry, folks, I plead guilty to that one.
That is cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
Cause and effect.
Right.
And a lot of people claim, Clayton Douglas was one of them, said that Paul tried to avoid the laws of cause and effect.
Okay.
That's not true. Here it is.
Yes.
Whatever a man should sow, that he shall also reap.
Galatians 6:7, folks, commit that to memory. Verse 8, for he that sows to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that sows to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Now, of course, we're not trying to spiritualize Paul's message by saying that we are not talking about fleshly deeds or fleshly people. He's saying that the people who are in the flesh need to be spiritual. That's a totally different concept of spiritualizing the word, right? Do you get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And I believe that the people who sow to their own flesh are the people who engage in pornography,
mm-hmm.
the people who are caught up in that, the people who are greedy and eat and hoard for themselves and
right.
don't take care of their kinsmen and their brethren around them.
Right.
The people that are wealthy when their kin or their neighbors, mm-hmm. if you want to use that phrase, are starving to death.
Right, and not doing anything.
Yeah,
in other words, those people who have become Judaized in the modern world.
Caught up in a material society.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Look at me and look at my toys and what do you have?
Yeah. Verse 9, and let us not be weary in well-doing. Well, if that doesn't involve good works, I don't know what does. For in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good to all men. And doing good means doing good works, especially to them who are of the household of the faith.
The family of the faith is what that word household means, and
okay.
that's the way I translate it.
Yes.
Towards those, doing good towards all, but especially towards those of the family of the faith.
Fantastic, fantastic. Verse 11, you see how large a letter I have written to you with my own hand. As many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh, they constrain you to be circumcised, only lest they should suffer persecution for the cross of Christ. What's he saying in verse 12?
All right, in the first part, in verse 11, he refers to his own blindness.
Okay.
His poor and failing eyesight.
Ah.
And he's using that as an example that looking good in body, because being of poor eyesight or any physical defect was considered a reproach by the Greeks.
Right.
Who idealized the
yes, the human form. Yes.
As we do today.
Yes, we do. Just look at any commercial.
Right. Youth and beauty are glorified today in the same manner.
Yes.
So Paul mentions his poor eyesight as a physical defect, and then he says, as many as desire to look good in the body, they compel you to be circumcised only in order that they would not be persecuted for the cross of Christ. In
okay.
other words, if the Judaizers get everybody circumcised, the cross means nothing.
Right.
Because they're controlling people through rituals.
That's right. And indeed, haven't they taken over our minds through propaganda, through television, through distortion of the scriptures? Haven't we been totally Judaized today in just this manner?
Absolutely. and people like all of the mainstream Christians believe in sacramentalism.
Right.
I went, not dipped in the water, so I'm okay and I'm saved and I have nothing to worry about. I can do what I want.
Now, wait a minute. That's a ritual.
That is a ritual. I have a paper. Baptism in what? Baptism is a ritual.
Okay. Interesting. So in other words, these people are still hypocrites. Even though they say they don't believe in the rituals of the law, they have substituted their own rituals, modern versions of them, and say, well, if you don't practice this ritual, you're not a true Christian.
Right. And then they go and do all kinds of foul things after they practice the ritual.
Right. Especially
Catholics
are especially guilty of that one. Okay.
Yes.
Verse 13, for neither they themselves who are circumcised keep the law. They're hypocrites is what he's saying.
Absolutely.
But desire to have you circumcised that they may glory in your flesh. In other words, they have convinced you and turned you against Christ.
Well, once you follow the rituals and attack them, it's you're one of the boys and you're just as guilty as they are.
Verse 14, but God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ. And this, you know, this is totally opposite to what anti-Paulians say, that Paul is preaching his own gospel. Okay?
Right. This can be shown to be supported throughout the epistles of James and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the gospels and the prophets.
Yeah. He's not preaching a different gospel at all. What he's trying to get across is, these two chapters, Galatians 5 and 6, are about the circumcision versus the uncircumcision. That's the context of these chapters.
Absolutely, and he's persuading the Galatians not to follow the Judaizers,
right,
who are of the circumcision,
yeah,
now, and who are pushing the people to maintain those laws.
Right, and we just have three more verses, and we'll conclude the book of Galatians. But I find it very interesting that there are those within Identity who hate Paul, and they constantly refer to Jewish authors, such as Eisenman, as references for their anti-Paul ideas.
Absolutely, and that was an entire theme in my response to Clayton Douglas's articles, which I wrote in Clifton Emmaheiser's Watchman's Teaching Letter.
Now, these same people will acknowledge that the Jews are liars and deceivers. Why should they believe them now when they're criticizing Paul?
They go quote Joaquin Prince and John Spong and all kinds of other Jews and people who are deceivers.
Right. So, in other words, they're getting their ideas from Jews and other deceivers about Paul. And we can see here, if these verses were properly translated and the context of the chapters were maintained, then this misunderstanding, this horrible misunderstanding, would not have occurred.
The Jews and the sexual deviants have to get rid of Paul.
Mm-hmm.
If they get rid of Paul, then they could get rid of Luke and Mark.
Okay, so are you saying now that this is a very clever deception on the part of the Jews who have actually begun this anti-Paulian movement sort of in the name of Judeo-Christianity or in the name of Christianity, when in fact it is initiated, maintained, and propagated by the Jews themselves?
One of the leading Judeo-Christian Paul bashers is John Spong.
Okay.
He's an Episcopalian bishop.
All right.
From Newark, New Jersey.
Okay.
He was the first Episcopalian bishop to promote the ordination of homosexual
marriage. Wow. Wow.
He is at the vanguard of the anti-Paul movement.
Mm-hmm.
Clayton Douglas quoted from him heavily in his Paul bashing articles.
Okay.
Now, H. Graeber, who wrote a book bashing Paul in the name of Christian Identity, he quoted from Joaquin Prince, a rabbi from Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
And a friend of John's mom.
Well, if the rabbi says it must be true.
And that fellow from South Africa that I can't even remember his name.
W.G. Finley.
Finley, yes, Mr. Finley. Quotes from John Spong and Joaquin Prince.
How could they allow themselves to be deceived by Jews?
And it was John Spong who was the catalyst of the division in the Episcopal Church today over homosexual bishops and homosexual ministers, and they have to get rid of Paul to advance their homosexual agenda.
So this is very sophisticated deception on the part of the Judaizers. and the anti-Paulians within Christian identity simply do not comprehend this.
Absolutely. The anti-Paulists in Christian identity condemn Paul because they feel he's a universalist.
Yes.
But I can take just as many citations in the Bible from Matthew and John and Luke and Mark out of context,
mm-hmm.
and show that those books can be contorted into universalism also.
They can be universalized as well out of context. Absolutely.
Yes.
Verse 15, for in Christ Jesus neither circumcision avails anything nor circumcision, but a new creature. We are to be remade. We, not the law, we are to be remade. And Paul says elsewhere, the whole creation waits for the day for the coming of the sons of God, us.
Yes, the revelation of the sons of God.
Yes, verse 16, and as many as walk according to this rule, peace be on them and mercy and upon the Israel of God.
Israel of Yahweh, not the Israel
right.
geographic.
Well, I'm quoting as it's written here.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, it should be Yahweh, because that's the name of God. You know, verse 17, from hereafter let no man trouble me, for I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Brethren, and he's addressing his brethren, he's not addressing the whole world, folks, the grace of our Lord, and that word grace should be usually translated as the word favor,
yes,
because
I
he bestows favor
grace.
Upon his people. The grace of our Lord Jesus Christ be with your spirit. Amen.
Very good.
So, how can one author be more thoroughly misunderstood than Paul has been at the hands of his translators?
Because they had to be universalists.
Mm-hmm.
They had to fit themselves into the picture.
Right.
So the early translators made a lot of mistakes in order to do that. Those mistakes, probably most of them were purposeful, and because there are many places where the King James just absolutely defies the Greek language and
uh-huh.
grammar.
Right.
And every modern translator is followed.
Right.
Nobody wants to point out, and nobody wants to be the guy to say, hey, all these other people are wrong, because he'll be marked as a quack.
That's right. So, well, didn't Jesus say that you would be hated for my sake?
Absolutely. Narrow is the way.
Yes. I wouldn't want to be perceived as a quack. They already call me a racist and a bigot and a right-wing kook.
Right. And you could probably talk about Greek language and grammar until you're blue in the face. And,
right.
And most of these mainstream people just...
Yeah. And they won't acknowledge the truth.
Won't get it.
Yeah, they won't get it because they've been – well, no, there's things going on. A lot of your mainstream theologians, and I'm talking Judeo-Christians, have graduated from Moody Bible Institute and Dallas Theological Seminary, which are the main sources of this nonsense, you know, this universalization, antinomianism, and Judaization in modern sense.
The Jews, through certain foundations controlled by other Jews on Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
infiltrated our seminaries as early as the 1920s, and they've basically taken them over, and they've turned our seminaries and our religious institutions into temples of secular humanism.
Cemeteries, yes. They've turned our seminaries into cemeteries, and the real shame of it all is that way too many Christians buy into this stuff because they really don't study the scriptures thoroughly enough to get the truth.
Absolutely. They don't study the scriptures at all. They go to church and they read a verse or they read
right.
a verse and they stop
yeah.
there.
They listen to their...
They go make some fried chicken or have a party.
Right.
Eli,
pork.
Can I go on hold for 1 second?
Yes, please? Surely.
Okay.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen... that pretty much concludes our discussion of the book of Galatians, and I just want to stress to everybody listening that the writings of Paul are exclusivist. In every book, he addresses his letters exclusively to Israelites and to no other people. In every book, he is trying to explain the difference between the old covenant under the rituals of the law and, of course, the broader applications of the law by which our own people unjustly accused each other and tried each other and made fools of each other. That's what he's talking about. He's not saying the law itself is evil. He never said that. Paul said, yea, we established the law by practicing love toward one another, compassion and understanding, and not just, you know, using the, you know, as Bill has been saying, legalism. And you cannot equate legalism with the law. We're talking about how people apply the law and how they incorrectly have abused the law and toward one another. And we should not be doing that, folks. We should not be doing that. We should always think humbly of our own, our own sins, our own inability to live up to our own expectations, let alone Yahweh's expectations. And therefore, we should treat each other in great humility, knowing our own faults. Because even in the Old Testament, it says, none of us have measured up to the law. None of us have measured up to what Yahweh expects of us. And therefore, when Jesus Christ, Yahshua Messiah, came and redeemed us on the cross, it was not through our obedience to the law that we were redeemed. It was through his grace. He forgave us in spite of the fact that we are guilty as sin. And in every case, that's what Paul is trying to tell, especially when he's addressing the circumcision. Okay, that's what he's talking about when he's addressing them. And when he's addressing the dispersion, that is the Israelites of the 10 tribes, which were added to later on by Sennacherib, those people are the uncircumcision or falsely called the Gentiles. That's not who's Paul talking about. He's talking about the Israelites of the dispersion.
Actually, the word Gentiles means people of the same race.
Right.
The Latin gentilis, and that's how Jerome, who used it first to translate the Greek word ethnos, must have understood it.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, that word has been abused terribly by the Jews who give us the false dichotomy that says that the Old Testament is about the Jewish people and the New Testament is for the non-Jewish people. Of course, the Jews are not part of Judah, nor are they part of Israel, so that the whole thing is fictitious.
Paul explains that well in Romans chapter 9.
Okay.
That not all of those in Israel are of Israel.
Right.
And he goes on to compare Jacob and Esau.
Right.
And he's telling us that all these people in Judea, they're Esau.
Dan from Georgia, so can we safely say that the Gentiles are non-Israelite white people? No. No. The Gentiles are, in fact, Israelites of the dispersion. They're non-Judahite white people. They're not of the house of Judah. They are the
Gentiles
house of... Yes.
Of the nations.
Yes.
And they're the same very nations that Abraham was promised would be of his seed.
Right. Right. So the Gentiles are, in fact, Israelites of the dispersion. They are the uncircumcision, and the Israelites of the house of Judah are the circumcision. Correct?
Yes. The Catholic Church teaches that many nations became Abraham's seed. But the scripture says that Abraham's seed would become many nations.
Right.
The scripture defies what the church teaches.
Exactly. They teach the opposite.
Yes.
They teach the opposite. Right. And so do the Judeo-Christians in many, many cases, as we have discovered in this book of Galatians. Well, Bill, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show with me. Can you just explain to people, because you have just finished the letters of Paul and the works of Luke, you have actually finished a complete translation of the New Testament, correct?
Yes, I have an entire translation of the New Testament. I have separate volumes of Paul and Luke that have thousands of footnotes and several appendices.
Mm-hmm.
I will hope to have, within the next 2 years, similar volumes for John and for the rest of the Gospels.
Okay.
But I intend to post on my own website my full translation, which actually the last of it is being typed as we speak, and by a gentleman who's typed all my translations who resides in Minnesota.
Okay.
And he's working on Mark right now, which is the last book to be typed, and I hope by February or March to have an entire translation of the New Testament available on my website.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Freely available.
Yeah, because the Christian world needs to have a proper translation of the Greek New Testament, which does not exist at the present time. Although there have been, Dan wants to know what's the website. I don't think you have it up yet, correct?
I don't have I have URLs in my head, but I haven't yet divulged them until I get a provider and get them
right.
registered.
Okay, well, we'll give that information as soon as it's available, okay? All right, well, Bill Fink, let's do this again sometime. We'll see. I don't know if you got an email address yet. People are asking for the address, but in any case, once you're ready to put all this stuff out, just let me know, and we'll
sure. My email is wmfink.
Okay.
WMFINCK.
Okay.
@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. All right. Very good. All right. So since we're done with the book of Galatians, let me just ask you what book do you think we should tackle next?
They could all use a treatment like you've done for Galatians.
Well, you know what? It may be because the book of Hebrews, to me, really expresses it. It talks about the kingdom of priests and the priesthood of Melchizedek and the difference between the old covenant priesthood and the new covenant priesthood. Maybe we should get into the book of Hebrews.
That would be helpful. That surely would be helpful because we have a priesthood in place since the time of Justinian that has no authority from Scripture.
That's right. They have a false authority, and too many of our people are following the false priesthood.
We only have one priest, and that is Yahshua Christ.
That's Yahshua Messiah, absolutely. All right. Bill Fink, thank you very much for being on the show today. I think it was very educational for those in the audience, and they had a lot of good comments that they really thought this was a great show. So let's do this again, okay?
Sure. Thank you, Levi. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Bill. Okay. And all for those listening, be sure to tune in tomorrow at noon Eastern time. We're going to be talking about Noah's flood, whether it was global or local, and what the actual after effects of that flood are. So in the meantime, Yahweh bless everybody. Thanks for listening. This has been a wonderful show. I really enjoyed this. And we need to talk the identity version of the Holy Scriptures more and more, and inform people of these shows that they understand what's really going on in the Scriptures. Praise Yahweh. Yahweh bless everybody. Good night. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.